Finding the Father, Chapter 2, A New Paradigm. Man is fed with fables through life, and leaves it in the belief he knows something of what has been passing, when in truth he has known nothing but what has passed under his own eye. Thomas Jefferson. I remember hearing of a story about a father riding a subway car with his four young children. These children were, most assuredly, the type of children that would make you never want to have kids. As the father was sitting engrossed in thought, his children were quite the opposite. One was incessantly pulling on the tie of a nicely dressed man as he was trying to hold an important conversation on his cell phone. Another was running up and down the middle aisle, screaming at the top of her lungs. The third was sitting near a conservatively dressed woman, asking questions that would make even a sailor blush. The fourth child, however, took the prize. He was literally balancing himself on the headrest of one of the seats, shining the bald head of a passenger. The entire car was about to explode when one of the passengers worked up the courage to approach the father. In a gruff tone, he blurted out, "Can't you see what your children are doing? What kind of father are you? Have you ever noticed that you can become immune to the behavior of your children and not even notice what they are doing?" As if to notice for the first time what his children were doing, the father snapped back to reality. He looked up at his fellow passenger as tears began to fill his eyes. Overcome by the emotion of the events he faced in his life, he spoke softly, "Oh, I'm sorry. You see, we have just returned from the hospital where these children just lost their mother, and I my wife. And I guess we are all just dealing with it the best way we know how." The whole subway car fell silent. Were the children still bouncing off the walls of the subway car? Yes. But were they still simply the most unruly children these passengers had ever met? Or had more information about their situation caused a shift in the way they viewed the children? No longer were they out of control. They were now children dealing with the recent loss of their mother in the best way they knew how. The change was not in the behavior of the children, but in the way the passengers looked at their behavior. The facts of the situation did not change, but the way those passengers viewed those facts did. What you, dear reader, and the passengers on that subway car just went through was what I went through with my father and what I was about to go through with God. I experienced a paradigm shift. Paradigms are not the facts that surround us, but the way we look at those facts. Our paradigms are not the world around us, but the way we look at the world around us. An example of this can be seen in the way many people relate to the Old Testament. Some see the God of the Old Testament as a bloodthirsty tyrant, while others, reading the same stories, see a God of love. The facts of those Old Testament stories are the same, but the way these two groups view the facts is as different as day and night. Our personal paradigms can be seen as our maps of our surroundings in life. When we look at a map, we are looking not at the actual streets, but at someone's interpretation of the actual streets. We judge the accuracy of a map by how closely its interpretation of the territory matches the actual territory. In the same way, our paradigms are not real, but the way we view what is real. We can judge the accuracy of our paradigm only by how closely it matches reality. One day a close friend of mine and I were sharing our faith door to door. He had visited a family the day before and was going back for a second visit, but this time we were having a difficult time finding their home. We drove around for hours, and finally Exasperated, he flipped over the map and realized that he had been looking not only at a map of a different county, but of an entirely different state. In moments like these, you can either laugh or cry, so we laughed. Put yourself in this story. What would you have done during those 2 hours? In retrospect, the solution seems obvious, but while we were going through it, we felt as if we simply needed to try harder. But this is just the point. The problem wasn't that we were not trying hard enough. The problem was that we had the wrong map. This accurately illustrates why many of us get frustrated in our religious experience. When we run into difficulties, many of us focus on our behavior and decide that we need to put in more effort. Others stick out their chin and decide to have a positive attitude, saying such things as, "After all, happiness is a choice." But I want you to stop and consider these options in the light of the experience my friend and I had with the map. We could have put in more effort. As a matter of fact, we did. And the only result was more frustration. We could have worked on our attitudes, but no matter how positive we may have been, in the end we would have only been positively lost. The problem was not the lack of effort or negative attitude. The problem was the map. I had a wrong paradigm of my father. What I went through with my dad was a paradigm shift. The facts of the custody battle, the birthday gifts, missed visits, and the child support payments did not change. Rather, the way I saw these things did. Stop and consider. Your parents may still be happily married. Your earthly family may not have gone through anything like mine. Yet my story is not mine alone. It is the story of every one of you reading this book. Since our birth, we have been raised in a world in which our culture, our churches, and our families have been whispering lies to us about our Heavenly Father. I don't believe anyone did this to us with malicious intent, but we have been lied to nonetheless. In our religious experience, as in the story of the map, many of us are putting in more and more effort, getting back few results, and ending up completely frustrated. The solution is not in focusing on our behavior, nor is the solution in simply having a positive attitude while settling for a stale religious experience. The solution is to go through a radical change in our religious map, the way we see God, and experience a spiritual paradigm shift. 99% of all the sermons we listen to, books we read, and quotations we underline deal in the realm of behavior and attitude. It's no wonder many of us feel as if we are getting nowhere. I would like to suggest that as long as we focus on our own effort, placing our attention on behavioral conformity and attitude adjustments alone, the solution to our spiritual frustration will always elude us. Let me explain. Remember the subway car story? Follow the path closely from cause to effect. With the new information, the passenger saw those unfortunate children differently, which caused them to think about them differently, which caused them to feel differently toward them, which changed their behavior and attitude. How we see determines how we think. How we think determines how we feel. And how we feel determines our behaviors and attitudes, and thus our experience. The problem lies not in our behavior, but in our map, our paradigm, the way we see. Today's religions, whether Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, or Christian, focus largely on their adherents' behavior. As long as we continue to focus on our behavior, our experience will never change. What we desperately need is a change in how we see God, our paradigms of His thoughts and feelings toward us. In my short life, I have met many people who say they used to be Christians. I ask why, and remarkably, it often boils down to the same thing. They get frustrated by their inability to live up to the expectations of other Christians. Today, they believe that Christianity is a joke. They view God as stern and against them, or at the very least, as someone who is never satisfied. I would like to suggest that the problem is not Christianity, but the way we as Christians see God. Jesus explained it this way. It is the Spirit that quickeneth, the flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. John 6:63. Here Jesus makes a profound statement. What every person wants, whether he or she knows it or not, is a viable, dynamic, spiritual experience with God. This is the purpose of his or her existence. We were not made simply to think, but to feel. Jesus states very clearly that it is the Spirit that gives life to the spiritual dimension of our existence. Now, follow his words carefully. He said that the flesh profits nothing. The flesh could be summed up as our attempt to put forth more effort, our decision to have a more positive attitude, or our focus on our behavior. But Jesus said that these profit nothing. What we need is the Spirit, and how he defines this Spirit is revolutionary. Jesus is referring to the story of creation. Adam was simply a dirt sculpture into whom God breathed the Spirit of life. It wasn't the dirt that brought him to life, but the Spirit. What is this Spirit that gives life to us spiritually when God breathes it into us? Jesus is not talking about the Holy Spirit, because he said, "The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, they are life." Words? What does he mean by words? Words are very powerful things. They communicate ideas, thoughts, and they even have the power to change paradigms. Look carefully at Jesus' words. What were his words about? Or rather, whom were they about? A casual afternoon reading of Jesus' parables reveal that they were about the kingdom of heaven. It seems as though every time Jesus opened his mouth, his very first words were, "The kingdom of heaven is like." When someone says, "I don't like the way City Hall does things," what is that person talking about? Not the bricks and mortar of the building, but the people who govern there and their policies. When Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is like," he wasn't talking about what the streets are made of or how big the mansions are, but rather what the person who governs there is like. Jesus' teachings were neither pep talks, trying to squeeze out more stringent behavior, or more effort, nor popular self-help speeches on how to have a positive attitude. Rather, Jesus was concerned primarily with how we see the person ruling the kingdom of heaven. His goal was to correct how we view God. Jesus knew that a call for more effort, a demand for a change in our attitude, or a lecture about our behavior while leaving our corrupt pictures of God intact would produce only frustration. So he began with the solution. He sought to correct our map, our perception of God, by saying, in effect, "Listen, more self-dependent effort will profit you nothing. You need to have the way you see God radically changed. A correct understanding of God will infuse your experience with the power and life that you so desperately desire. Just as it was the Spirit that gave life to Adam physically, my teachings about God are spirit, and they are life for you spiritually." Have you ever felt as if your relationship with God depended on you, while the more effort you put in, the harder it got? Or have you ever put more effort into your relationship with God only to get back more frustration? Has your relationship with God ever been like a proverbial carrot hanging out in front of you, just beyond your grasp? Have you ever felt as if your prayers didn't even make it past the ceiling? If so, you are not alone. What you need, dear reader, is a radical change in your paradigm of God. A radical change in the way you view God will bring with it a radical change in your thoughts toward God. The change in your thoughts toward God will bring about a change in the way you feel toward God. Finally, the change in your thoughts and feelings toward God will bring about a change in your behavior, your attitude, and eventually your experience as a whole. The change that you long to experience in your behavior does not come through more effort. It comes through a change in how you see. Seeing determines our thoughts and feelings. Thoughts and feelings determine behaviors, attitudes, experience. In our religious experience, change in behavior is not the result of a strong will or more decided effort. It is the result of a change in how we see. Do you long for a change? Do you long to have a living, dynamic, spiritual experience with God? Embark with me, then, on a journey of change, not just in behavior or attitude, but in perception. You see, character is revealed through actions, and character, by definition, is comprised of an individual's thoughts and feelings. But a person's thoughts and feelings are determined by his perceptions. This all works in reverse as well. As we study God's actions toward the human race, His ultimate desire is that we would see beyond His actions to the thoughts and feelings in His heart toward us that lead to His actions. His hope is that we would perceive something of the love that surges in His heart for us, that compels His actions of kindness toward us. He longs for us to see the way He sees us. Therefore, I invite you, through the remaining pages of this book, to step into the realm of amazing grace, extravagant love, and intimate friendship. It is in these themes alone that we find the change for which we long. We focus so much on behavior. But what would happen if we prayed for a dynamic change in our picture of God? Could it be that we are wishing for a heavenly daddy to love and who loves us? Are we struggling to have a relationship with Him, wishing that it were alive and meaningful, but not recognizing the real root of our frustration, our wrong perception of Him? May your prayer throughout the remainder of this book be just like that of blind Bartimaeus. Son of David, I just want to see. This is the eye salve we so desperately need. Do you want it, my friend? Then come with me quickly to what we need to see first.